Mason.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks superfan. Not going to hear a whole lot to me. I'm just kind of doing the introduction. We've got a very special show for you today, though. As we continue our draft series, we bring in a special guest, Matthew Phillips of 40 Yard Scouting, a real bona fide drafting expert. He, alongside our draft expert superfans, are going to dive through, talk a little bit of game, talk some shop about who's good, who's bad, who they agree with, who they disagree on, a little bit of history of 40 Yard Scouting itself. They're doing some good things. Please make sure to follow Matthew Phillips at MattPhillips78. They're doing some fundraising for some charities as well. So not only is it something that you love, but there's a little bit of good that can be done if you're following 40 Yard Scouting. With that, I'm going to turn you over to Neil, Rob, Chris, and our guest, Matt Phillips.
Hello, listener. Hello, world. We're joined tonight, as usual, for our Sunday show, our fourth draft show. And we're joined by Rob, our Bills super fan. And Rob, of course, you are the opposite of Doug Whaley in the fact that you get to talk in public.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't let him talk anymore. They're using the one voice moniker just having McDermott talk to everyone. But Whaley did a terrible job in his last press conference, and they haven't let him talk to the media since, which is probably good news. I have a funny feeling he won't be on the team about a week after the NFL draft.
Well, I'm sure there's 31 other teams longing to sign him up. Also joining us tonight, we've got Chris, our Saints superfan. And Chris, of course, not at all like Mickey Loomis, because actually Chris quite likes football and not basketball.
No, but much like Mickey Loomis, I'm terrible with money.
And tonight, we also have a special guest, and that is Matt Phillips. And Matt is from 40 Yards Scouting. And Matt, welcome to the show. Great to have you on tonight to give us, a bit of draft expertise, and also to take us through word by word of your 267-page draft guide.
Good evening, guys. Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's a real privilege.
Well, before we go any further, Matt, we really have to go through the important question. And we're going to have an important question for life, really, in this one. So, you know, take it seriously. Picture yourself Sunday afternoon. You've had a long day looking scouting, really, looking at some tape, looking at a bit of film, some game coverage from 2016's college season. Unfortunately, you've had to sit and look through hours of quarterback tape, which has worn you down, Matt. And you're going to pop out, get yourself a pizza. So you're standing there at the pizza stall and you're thinking, great, I'll have my crispy base. I'll have my tomato sauce and I'm going to have cheese on top. And you have four toppings, Matt. Four toppings. What are those four toppings going to be?
Whoa, four toppings. Okay, right. I tend to go for like black olives, porcini mushrooms, some pancetta and spinach.
Ah, right, okay. That sounds very modern.
It's kind of more like extra. Kidding myself on being healthy. But really, it just gives you that impression. But I'd have to have a full blowout, like you say.
Okay, Chris, what grade are you going to give Matt for that pizza there?
That's not even a pizza. That's just...
It's an Italian pizza.
It's something. We'll just...
Yeah.
It's the Jabril peppers of pizza. It's terrible.
It is. I don't like peppers, though. So. The food, I do like the player.
So. Okay, Rob, before Chris says anything else terrible about his pizza, what are you giving his pizza? Are you giving it an A? Are you giving it solid B?
No, sir. However, I do like pancetta, any type of thick-cut bacon you're going to put on the pizza. I'll give him kudos for that. I do actually enjoy porcini mushrooms, but the other green stuff, yeah, the olives, the spinach, no. So I give it a 50%, whatever that is.
I didn't mention okay. I am a what we call in London a bit of a hobo. So that probably goes, and I've got a beard, so that probably explains some of the reason why I go for the freaky toppings.
Ah. Well, I always, honestly, I always picture our super fans on this podcast as all having beards, a bit like Gold Rush or the Moonshine Gang, goes, you know, on TV.
It goes to the territory, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yes. I'm sure Chris is running his fingers through his beard as we speak. I'm gonna give you a solid B there for that pizza. It's healthy. It's got black olives. I'm a big fan of black olives myself. I would say, Matt, I'd probably want to have pepperoni on that pizza because, as we all know, a pizza without pepperoni is like a kiss without love. But there we go. We'll move on from there, and we'll say, yep, welcome to the show, and you can send Rob a pizza whenever you like. I'm sure he'll be delighted. Matt, in terms of your guide, why don't you give us a little bit of a brief history of the guide? Obviously, there's the wonderful charitable side of your guide, which everybody needs to know about. And, of course, as I said before, it's over 250 pages, man. I've only got kind of bits and pieces from the first 35 pages, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's going to take me till next year's draft to read it. You're a bit late putting it out on the 1st of April.
Yeah, sure. I mean, thanks. I mean, I've been doing it for I used to play the game at youth level, and obviously didn't have the talent to sort of take the game any further than that. So I kind of got into scouting some sort of 10 years ago, mostly kind of based on my knowledge being a player, and also self-teaching, being self-taught in terms of scouting as well. So it happened over a number of years, and that sort of went along with my interest in the game. And then sort of 5 years ago, decided to start my own business, all year round, but also sort of focused on producing draft guides from the knowledge I have and in scouting players and experience, and try to bring that to, firstly, to an international crowd. We don't have kind of a guide to the draft here. But also that's kind of grown, and now I speak to sort of the NFL community as a whole now, rather than just European fans. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's been going for 5 years. This is the fifth year, and yeah, it just seems to be getting more and more crazy rather than simpler.
And in terms of the 40 yards part of it, why 40 yard scouting and not red zone scouting or goal line scouting?
Or a 10-yard penalty or something. I think it goes with, you know, the 40-yard dash. But actually, one of the main reasons as well is that the guy who did the logo for me, he came up with some ideas, and the one he came up with was the hash marks with the 40 in it. So I like to say it was more of an educated decision, but it was the logo I liked most, and it had 40, and I didn't want to change it again, so I just thought I'd call myself 40 yards. I wish I could be more scientific about it.
Well, I tell you, there's one thing about your draft guide, and that is that a more detailed draft guide I don't think anyone will find anywhere. So let's get in a little bit to what you've done this year, because obviously we don't have we don't have 3 weeks to talk it through, Matt, but we'll do our best in the next 20 minutes or so. And if I could just start off by saying, or by asking you, just for us sort of fans who, I mean, like I speak for Rob and Chris as well, I think we do our best to put in as much time as we can to watch tape, look into the prospects that are coming out into the draft. But for you, how many games or how many snaps does it take before you know who a guy is? I think, for example, if you take something like Myles Garrett, you can probably see it in probably like 10 or 15 snaps that the guy is physically a special, special talent. But in terms of, for a grading point of view, how many games, how many snaps does it take before you know? It might even be over a couple of seasons. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I tend to follow the player from their first active season. So that could be their freshman season or their redshirt freshman season, if they decide to sit out the first year. So I generally tend to follow the high school recruiting process and then kind of familiarise myself with the players that, you know, are likely to have an impact on the NFL draft in sort of 3-4 years' time. And when I'm watching games, I'm actually watching a number of players simultaneously. So that includes a freshman as well. So Once they kind of catch my eye, then I'll follow them through the entire process. And that kind of, so I kind of got a good idea about that player anyway. And pretty much most of my scouting mind is made up on that player before they enter their final season. So be that the junior or senior season. And then what I would do in their final season is then to make sure that I watch a minimum of 3 games, but preferably 4 or 5 of their games, which I tend to do anyway, because there'd be quite a few players I'm scouting in that game in particular. So so I tend to watch them sort of 4 or 5 times in the final season, but really throughout their career.
I have a question for you, Matt. This is Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Now, when you say towards the end there, you pick about 4 to 5 games. Do you pick specific games? You know, because I like to try to find games to where I know the player particularly struggled and excelled, to kind of see which, you know, why he did either or.
It's not a conscious choice during the season. So like during the season, I will watch that team, you know, sort of 5, 6, 7 times that has sort of a required number of draft eligible prospects on it. So I kind of get a sort of general view during the season. And when I go back again, just to kind of tidy up my grades, I will generally tend to focus on their toughest matchup, be that opposition, or it could be the toughest opponent. So if it's an offensive lineman, for instance, I'll go for the right defensive end that you're playing against, the best one that I can find during his career. So sort of toughest matchup, and then toughest fixture, and then a few other games, just general games as we go along.
When you watch a player going up against another top player, is that more valuable than watching him going up against somebody like me or Rob?
Well, I think it's part of the process. It's a piece of the jigsaw puzzle. But you shouldn't base the whole of your scouting on that one matchup, because, you know, if you've got 2 elite collegiate talents playing against each other, then that gives you an indication for the next level. But it shouldn't be the whole scouting report on that player. So it goes in context with everything else they've done. So if they pretty much stink technically all through their career, and they suddenly play really well on a one-off basis against an NFL eligible talent, then it shouldn't really paint too great a picture. It maybe make you go back and look again, but it's kind of part of the overall process. But clearly, if they're already high up in my estimation, then they play great against one of the top prospects in that season, or somebody who's going to be in the top 7 rounds, then that kind of enhances your scouting report, if that makes sense.
Okay, so would you say then you would value a good performance over, say, valuing a poor one? Okay, I know that's something that I struggle with watching film, is I can watch 5 great games out of a player, but when I see that one bad one, that's the one that I tend to stick on, and it's something that I work on.
Yeah, I think as human beings, I think we tend to be. I think if anyone says they don't have a bias, they're probably lying. And I'm talking about the pros at this. I think you just got to take a balanced view, because at the end of the day, they are college athletes. They can have good games, they can have bad games, but whether or not it's more kind of like the technique, even those bad games, you still see the flashes, and that's what you're looking at, the flashes of technical ability that translate to the next level. So even sometimes during games where players struggle, you still see a few snaps in there that say, okay, the guy's still got it, he's just having an off day. So it's very easy to, your natural reaction is to put too much weight to those kind of games where they struggle. And I think generally the media does a job of that, doesn't it? I mean, if a top ranked prospect has one off day, that kind of, the media will kind of write that guy off altogether. But I think you've got to see it as part of the overall picture. So you'll remember the struggles, and it's important to remember those. But also, it's also important to think about what that player can do. If that a higher kind of higher weighting than perhaps what they can't do.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, we're going to look at this quarterback group, because it's obviously much talked about. Everybody's it feels in the media they're really desperately seeking to find somebody who could be like last year, where we had Goff and Wentz going 1 and 2. It feels like the media are desperately longing to find this guy in this quarterback group. Tell us how you've graded the top maybe the top five players in the draft. And I'm talking about, obviously, Trubisky and Watson, Davis Webb, perhaps, sure. Kaiser, Mahomes. Give us a little insight. Maybe give us your 5-1.
Sure. I think, firstly, I think you made a fantastic point. The media does look for the quarterback class, and you'll find most years that the media will quite happily say that the quarterback class stinks. And they did. We were in this position 12 months ago, and we had sort of a record number of rookie starting games in the NFL just a few months later. So it's important to kind of keep that in context. But yeah, in terms of my grading, five, I've got DeShone Kizer. Fourth, I've got Davis Webb. Third, Pat Mahomes. Second, I've got Mitch Trubisky. And first is DeShone Watson.
Okay. And I know Chris is a Chris is a big fan of Pat Mahomes. So, Chris, do you want to just tell us why, you know, I know you were saying you think that maybe the Saints will be looking at Mahomes somewhere in this draft?
I do. I don't necessarily disagree with his rankings, though. I do like Mahomes. I mean, I think he's got a phenomenal arm strength, and he's just got that old kind of Brett Favre feel to him. He's a gamer and a bit of a wild card, and I just enjoy watching him. I would prefer, I'm thinking Mahomes at 32 to the Saints. I would prefer Watson or Trubisky, but I don't know. It's one of those times that you stop trying to analyze things and you just enjoy watching the kid play.
If I could just ask all three of you guys, Rob, Chris, and Matt, do you think this is a year where these five guys would be much better off if they were drafted by teams who had a starting quarterback in place, where there's not going to be a question about the guy getting benched for this rookie? So like the Saints taking one of these guys because they've got Breeze there. Rob, do you want to go first there?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is, you know, kind of one of those years. I look at a player like Mitch Trubisky who, you know, does things that, you know, make you think that he's going to be, you know, has the potential to be an elite level quarterback, but he still, I think, you know, needs seasoning and has some things he still needs to learn. I think that, you know, for me specifically, a team like the Buffalo Bills, you know, they are a team that could be in the market for a quarterback. And with Tyrod Taylor, you know, the restructure of the deal kind of sets up nicely for them to keep Tyrod as the QB for 2017. But then once 2018 rolls around, really kind of get out of the deal without too much damage. And if they do draft a quarterback in the first or second round, you know, one of these five guys, you know, it would give them a year to kind of work with them. I think that, you know, there's no guy who could come in, you would feel comfortable, you know, coming in right away and really, you know, kind of lighting it up, at least with this year's class.
Matt?
Yeah, I think it, more or less it goes with the territory. You, in an ideal world, you'd like to sit rookies from any class, really, unless you've got, you know, Andrew Luck or you... you know, your Jameis Winston's, et cetera, Marcus Mariota, but most quarterbacks prospects really could do with sort of sitting behind an established starter for a season or two. I do think that, I think sometimes at the next level, we can be sort of guilty of overthinking things. And, you know, I was a massive fan of Dak Prescott. But if you'd asked me this time last year whether he could come in straight away and lead the team to the playoffs, I'd say, well, probably he's not ready for that. And obviously he proves everybody wrong. So sometimes you don't really know what you've got until you put guys in there. And I think that especially applies to Watson, because Watson's one of those guys who adjusts so well to what's happening situationally in games. He's a very intelligent guy. And he's the one guy that the more the clutch situation that you put him in, the more he thrives and doing things kind of off script. And he's improved so leaps and bounds in terms of the sort of drive building aspect of his game, you know, sitting behind his protection and throwing into the short and intermediate areas where he's kind of struggled until his senior season. But I think he's the kind of guy, he's got that aura about him that makes the players around him better. And he can kind of, as we've seen at Clemson, just kind of elevate the rest of the team when they're kind of struggling. And he reminds me, that kind of personality that we saw in Dak Prescott at Mississippi State and with the Cowboys. You know, he can survive and he can take his hits. And I think if you have to put him into the situation in week one, I think he'd be absolutely fine with some growing pains, of course. But as I say, that goes with the territory.
Yep. Chris?
I agree exactly with what you're saying. You know, one of the things that I think that goes unmentioned a lot is you can end a quarterback's career by putting him in too early. David Carr, I think, was a prime example of that. An older name with Columbus, Tim Couch. They had a really hard time after their rookie. Both of them played behind horrible offensive lines. They had a hard time not watching the blitz. And you saw two very talented kids coming from college, just their careers fizzle. So it's very important to make sure that not just physically the player is ready, but mentally. That there has to be a mental toughness that player possessed to be able to go in there and play. Dak showed it last year, but unfortunately, I think he's the exception to the rule. No matter how talented you are, Carson Palmer was a very talented kid, a very high draft pick coming out of USC, and they still benched him for John Kitna, of all people, and it was the right call.
I totally agree with what you're saying. I mean, all these guys, especially this year, it really does depend on the environment they fall in and the situation they fall into. You know, if they fall into a bad situation behind a terrible offensive line, then you're more than likely going to kill that prospect off and that talent, as we saw in those two guys you mentioned. So I think teams have kind of got a bit wiser generally in the last few years, knowing where to preparing for the incoming quarterback rookie. So I like to think that'd be the case. I'm not so sure the Browns, that's what worries me about the Browns, you know, if they kind of put all their hopes into one of these guys and just kind of stick him out there in week one. And yeah, that's kind of my only worry, really.
Quick question for you, Matt. You mentioned the Browns. Now, they have Cody Kessler there now. Where would you rank Cody Kessler with these quarterbacks? Do you think that quarterback is a big need for Cleveland early? Or do you think they should try to build around, and do you think they still have something with Kessler? Where did you have him ranked last year?
I had Kessler ranked as a fifth rounder last year. I did really like him as a player, particularly some intelligent quarterback who, you know, when he's at USC, he's very used to playing sort of West Coast offense, and he's very good at that. He's a cerebral quarterback. He could make a number of reads and throw accurately, you know, without the massive arm, if you like. So in this class, I mean, I tend to grade players based on their own talent rather than where they're likely to go in this class. So I'd probably, if I had Kessler now, I'd probably have him somewhere between sort of Trubisky and Mahomes in this class. So it just shows you how, you know, this class isn't quite as good. But somebody like that who is kind of very familiar with making a number of reads, and just his sort of diagnostic skills and his awareness, positional awareness, and actually playing, comfort playing in the pocket. So as you said, I would personally, I've said this a number of times to the guys on Twitter, Cleveland Brown fans, I personally wouldn't spend either the first or 12th pick on a quarterback. You know, I'd like to see them. They've brought Kessler in for a reason. To me, he can lead an offense perfectly fine. You know, give him something to pass to, give him a supporting cast. I know they've improved their offensive line this offseason. Now it's time to give him some players to actually sort of pass to, you know, tight ends, wide receivers. Because otherwise it's no point sticking him out there and, you know, seeing him fail.
Okay, let's... you got all this agreement is rather annoying. So tell me, why on earth have you got Davis Webb in there at number four? He's terrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going from... I mean, I really rated him highly at Texas Tech, where he was before he transferred to California. It's pretty difficult playing for California at the moment. They're going through a bit of flux, and it's a, you know, although the system's the same in Cal as it was at Texas Tech. When he's at Texas Tech, he showed those kind of next level traits. He's got the size, he's got the arm. Of course, you know, he is very raw in terms of short to intermediate level accuracy. And, you know, it really is kind of that big-armed prospect. But he's got fantastic physical dimensions and athleticism. And that's the kind of thing that you can bring into your program, not as the starter, bring into your program and kind of mold him into the kind of player that's going to fit your system. And I think, you know, quarterback coaches across the league will be kind of rubbing their hands at getting someone like Davis Webb. If you get him in like the third or the fourth round and, you know, give him time, 2-3 years, and just kind of, you know, just work on the gifts that he has. He's hot and cold. I definitely agree with that. But he's got those traits that you look for in a quarterback, and that sort of that high upside, if you like.
was his best move getting away from the air raid offense. And for 10 bonus points, any of you three guys, give me the last air raid quarterback who was a huge success in the NFL.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, the air raid is notorious, which is why you're going to have the transition with him. I mean, he's not going to be a starter in the first couple of years, at least.
Okay, and just one more quick quarterback question, maybe one for all three of you guys. Of these quarterbacks that we've got in this class, which one is likely to be starting and deemed to be successful in 5 years' time, if you had to choose one? Matt, you go first.
I think the first guy, the guy who would start first, would be Deshaun Watson. But I think he's kind of ready now, but his ceiling is a lot lower than say someone of Deshaun Kaiser's ability. He's got sort of fantastic ceiling, great upside, and he probably will end up being the better prospect in 5 years.
Okay, so Trubisky for Matt. What about you, Chris?
For me, it'd be Deshaun Watson. I like his mental makeup. He still has concerns for me. He tends to overthrow on the deep ball a lot, from what I'm seeing. And he tends to lock on to Mike Williams, but he fits within what Dabo Swinney likes to run. It's a very unique offense that they ran the last 2 years, which I thought was nice. It definitely gave showed what he can do on the fly, and I think that'll help him transition. And to go back for a second with all your air raid bashing, I mean, the air raid did put out the hefty lefty Jared Lorenzen, who might not be in the NFL, but still a Canadian League hero. So let's not forget about the old hefty lefty.
Okay, that's 10 points for you. Well done there. And okay, right. I'm going to say my pick would be Nathan Peterman. And I can't believe he's not in your top five, Matt. Say one nice thing about Nathan Peterman for me, please, and I'll give you an extra topping for your pizza.
Very solid.
Thank you.
He's actually my sixth guy on this list. So there we go.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to just quickly give us one of the hardest things. Well, I'm speaking personally here, and I think probably for Rob and Chris as well. One of the hardest things to do is to identify the key traits of an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman, especially the offensive lineman when you're watching them. Tell us, just give us a few things that we can use going forward for what to look for with offensive and defensive linemen when you're grading them.
Yeah, offensive linemen, I think the old adage goes, if you don't notice them, then they're doing a good job. But I think it obviously goes much further than that. The first thing I look for is leverage. Now, that sounds kind of an easy thing for an offensive lineman to be able to sort of bend at the hips rather than his knees. Lots of offensive linemen at the college level tend to sort of lean forward and reach for pass rushers to get their hands on their chest, which means they're off balance and they can quite easily be beaten or ball rushed into the quarterback. So you're looking at leverage and sort of good core strength, low center of gravity, and sort of playing low enough to get underneath the pads of defensive linemen. So you're looking at that. Also, if you're playing on the exterior, so either left or right tackle, you're looking at how quickly they can laterally move and get themselves set to the edge quickly, because if they lose a step or they don't have quick explosion off the offensive line, off the snap, sorry, then they're quickly beaten around the corner. So it's about those guys, their lateral agility, their lateral core strength, and actually be able to slide out and meet pass rushers before they can get the inside or dip their shoulder, if you like. Obviously, you'll see with guards, you'll tend to find that guards are better in a shorter area, a smaller area. So we tend to call it the phone booth. So players that are playing at guard or centre, they're not quite as mobile or have that sort of lateral quickness that a tackle would do. But they kind of need to depend on their technique. So that, again, that's their pass set, that's their leverage, that's their pad level, their core strength, and sort of how fluid their hips are. Much the same goes with sort of interior defensive linemen. Again, it's speed off the snap. If they're sluggish, they'll be kind of stonewalled pretty quickly. Again, pad level, natural leverage, and also looking at kind of things like center of gravity again, but also the anchor. Can they kind of hold off at the point of attack, or do they get pushed back pretty quickly? Or also motor. Do they give 100% effort on every snap as well?
That's our Malik McDowell example.
That's, we come to him soon. And then obviously defensive ends, it depends what kind of system they're playing in. But generally, if you're rushing the passer, then it's got to be somebody who quickly diagnoses the play. You can quick change direction, quick off the snap, sort of flexibility, agility, and, you know, a good set of strong arms and heavy hands that can quickly control exterior left or right tackles. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you tend to look for all those things. And the more you kind of do it over a number of years, you'll pick up what to look for, what not to look for. And you'll tend to find that the guys that can't do that will kind of jump out at you within 5 to 10 snaps of a game. And the guys that can, you'll kind of quickly water them. But I think it's just a case of just keep watching. You know, the more tape you watch, the more games you watch, then the more aware you become of who can technically, a big kind of sticker when it comes to technique over kind of physical dimensions or kind of, you know, athleticism, if you like.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Rob?
I mean, for me, I'm probably a little bit newer at the, you know, watching tape stuff as opposed to, you know, Chris and Neil. So my question is just in regards to, you know, offensive linemen, obviously teams have different schemes that they run. One scheme that, you know, is fairly popular is, you know, more of a zone blocking scheme. What are some maybe added dimensions or things, specifics that you look for in offensive linemen that, you know, may fit into that style of a you know, an offensive lineman?
Yeah, sure. So you're looking for guys who are obviously much quicker off the snap at the line of scrimmage. So they're not necessarily expected to sort of be that wider, blocky body that you'll see in kind of power run guards or centers. So for the interior guys, you're looking for kind of a little bit less size. So you're kind of looking at sort of around about 280 pounds, so a little less height. So sort of, you know, between 6'2", 6'3", something like that. And guys that can quickly get off the snap. They have to be intelligent, obviously, to know exactly what's going on with the defense. And also kind of just overall athleticism. So quickness off the snap and also mobility either side. Core strength again, but also just sort of kind of, that's where they're, yeah, that's where the cone times come in at the combine, explosion. And you'll see those guys, as soon as the snap's made, they're already kind of halfway down, they're already sort of 5-10 yards downfield. Particularly when you're looking at sort of left tackles, right tackles, etc. They're kind of, you're kind of looking again at sort of explosion off the snap. So those first two or three steps, but also having that kind of awareness of their position awareness and where they are in the field to sort of make sure that they meet their correct assignment. They take the right linebacker in the blocks and just get out into space quickly. They have to be comfortable with space. You'll see lots of sort of left and right tackles in college who are kind of good pass blockers, but they're kind of very slow off the snap. And, you know, if that's the case, then they're not really suited to that kind of zone scheme.
Okay. Chris?
I was just curious with your, it sounds like you've got a pretty, very in-depth breakdown of your offensive defensive lineman. Who was your highest ranked defensive lineman? Who was the guy that just beat everybody you've ever scouted before?
Oh well, that, I mean, it really does depend every year. I mean, the highest grade I've had on anyone is Dontari Poe, because of the overall package. You know, he had pretty much everything. He had all the tools. He played in pretty much every position along the front four, the front five at Memphis. So, although his stats, he got dinged a lot on his stats, but that was mainly because he played on a terrible team, and he was asked to do kind of everything. So sort of, zero technique, three technique, five technique. He played all the positions. Obviously, we saw at the combine, he had fantastic athleticism. So he had the athleticism of a linebacker, but playing as a 350-pound nose tackle, who could also rush the passer. So, yeah, he kind of ticked every box. And we've got a guy this year called Montravius Adams from Auburn, I'm sure you're familiar with, who has the same explosion, athleticism, but it does tend to have a few questions in terms of whether we can get his motor firing on every snap.
In terms of offensive linemen this year, just give me your top five tackles, because I was looking today and I've forgotten who it was, but there's somebody on there. I thought, why is he in your top five tackles? Oh, although I do understand it's a pretty rough year for tackles.
Yeah, it's. I think it's sort of, a lot's been said about how rough the class is this year, but you've still got, you know, enough guys in there who, you know, particularly if you're looking for a left tackle, there's sort of three or four guys in there who he would be able to do a fantastic job in time. It's just not that deep a class this year as compared to, you know, previous years. So I've got Ryan Ramczyk of Wisconsin as my first. It's just been fantastic this season. Forrest Lamp. Now, obviously, a lot of people were expecting him to move into guard, but I think his arm length is good enough based on Senior Bowl and the combine measurements. I think he could, for me, I'd like to see him stay there and give him sort of camp to really kind of prove his worth at left tackle, because in terms of pass protection, he's just so technically skilled, and it's got plays a great finesse and mobility and strength. I'd like to see him stay there, first of all, and then if it doesn't work out, then you can always bump him inside to guard. You've got Garrett Bowles of Utah, Deion Dawkins of Temple, and Taylor Mokum.
That's the man, Dawkins.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Dawkins quickly, just what to expect from him.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Dawkins is sort of very experienced left tackle, played for Temple for 3 years as the starter. He's everything about him sort of shouts finesse. So while he won't wow you of measurables or amazing athleticism, he's just very smooth. He moves very well. He gets out to his pass set very quickly. He could do some additional strength for the NFL. That's kind of one knock on him. But in terms of all the facets of pass protection, he's a very sort of technically sound guy. He's not fantastic in any one area, but he's very, very solid in sort of all the areas we look at, really.
And just in terms of Forrest Lamp, if you want to see a really great performance for Forrest Lamp, would you say the Alabama game where he played left tackle?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very hard to find anything bad with Forrest Lamp throughout his career. But, you know, that was the game we were looking at, you know, when he's faced with John Allen and Tim Williams. And, he played fantastically well. He played like he has done throughout his career. Nothing flashy, but he got the job done.
Yep. Okay, before we get into a few quick hits and before we let you go, Matt, one more question, and that is about the tight end class, of course, which is being looked upon as one of the best tight end classes. In fact, one of the best classes in general for a number of years across drafts. How far down the draft can we expect to see a starting tight end? Because obviously you've got Engram, you have Bucky Hodges, and of course the two top guys in Howard and in Njoku. Can we be looking at starting tight ends getting picked up in the third, fourth round?
Yes, I think so. I think there's always a caveat, because obviously if you're picking sort of tight end in the third, fourth round, you're looking at him being sort of number two or number three initially, depending on sort of severity of the needs at that team. But generally, they tend to be kind of second or third guys. But I think this year, you know, it makes a change to actually sort of scout such a talented and deep class as this, because it's been pretty iffy the last few years. Yeah, I mean, you'll be able to pick up somebody of the likes of a Jeremy Sprinkle in the third or fourth round, who I really like. He can just do so much. He's a fantastic blocker and a very skilled sort of mismatch in the seam. But also you've got guys like Cole Hicotini of Louisville. You've got Jono Smith. You've got Adam Shaheen, who's a small school guy from Ashland. And you've got Sorbet, again, from Drake, another small school guy who can pretty much do everything. So I think, you know, you're looking at probably, I'd say, fourth round is the ceiling for a starting tight end in year one. But you could pick up some, if you're looking for a blocking tight end, you've got Colin Jeter of LSU and Blake Jarman of Oklahoma State. You'll be able to pick them up in sort of round five, maybe even six, and they'll be able to sort of start straight away. And you'll be able to put them in as an extra blocker.
In terms of my favourite player there, Evan Engram, is he the best wide receiver, or is he possibly the best slot wide receiver in this draft?
I think he can do so much more than just... I think you'd be limiting him if you had him just as a slot receiver, but he is your sort of prototypical built-up wide receiver, if you like, and he certainly plays the tight end position like that. And I'd like to see him do lots of stuff out of the H-back position, personally. But you could use him in so many different ways. And he is a mismatch just purely because of his size and his speed and after the catch ability.
Okay. Chris, Rob, do you want to throw anything in there about tight ends in this year's draft before we go into the quick hits?
I do have a question on what your thoughts are regarding someone. Tyrone Swoops, I'm seeing that he's going to transition kind of to tight end in the NFL. He was a quarterback for the University of Texas. I was curious on what you thought your thoughts were, is just kind of his prospects as a, you know, developmental guy, you know, as potentially be a tight end in the NFL.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I was quite surprised he went for the tight end role. I sort of would have liked to have seen him, you know, go in as a running back, personally, because as we saw at Texas, once he's got the ball in his hands, you know, obviously that's from a direct snap, but even so, like his strength and his running, and he runs with like a low pad level. He's got lots of strength and burst and explosion. So I think he'd be able to translate that obviously to the tight end position, but it's just a massive transition for, you know, a quarterback or someone like his to be able to quickly transition to a whole new position like that. But he's always been an intelligent, kind of aware player who his position awareness and awareness on the field has always kind of stood out when he's got the ball in his hands, obviously as a quarterback. So he'd be able to take that quarterback brain, if you like, with him to the new position, which will give him a head start. But I think like his run after the catch ability is really interests me. And it's a shame these guys kind of, they're so good in college and they have to kind of transition out from the position that they've been playing at in college. But yeah, he's kind of a guy that I do like. It's always quite fun watching him at Texas. So he's kind of one of those guys that you root for. And yeah, I say, obviously, give him a year or two and you never know what you could develop there. It's certainly worth a fifth or sixth or maybe seventh round flyer. I mean, at that stage, you're taking sort of flyers on players anyway. So why not get that sort of piece of clay and try to mold him into something that you'll get him sort of significant snaps in the NFL.
Chris,
no, let's get to these quick hits. I'm interested in okay. some of these for Matt.
Okay, right. The quick hits. Then we'll do so for each of you three guys. Just give me very quickly a name, or a couple of names, or a couple of or a sentence in response, and we'll go Chris, Matt, and Rob in that order. Okay, and I'll try and remember that through all the quick hits. Right, first one. Who is a top day three value player or players? Chris?
Top day three. If he falls, I'm going to say Kareem Hunt, the running back from University of Toledo. I know there's been some weight fluctuation with him, but none of it bad. He's never shown up overweight or underweight. He just kind of has the ability to play both at about 223 and 205, which I think is what he weighed in at the Senior Bowl. The kid's got great balance, keeps his feet moving after contact, and seems to have a great open field vision once he gets past the offensive line. Reminds me a lot of a former St. Pierre Thomas. Could be dangerous as a number two running back, give you some on kick returns, and shows good balance in the screen game.
That's a great call. I love Kareem Hunt. He's one of those guys that's kind of bubbly under that nobody really is talking about too much. Mine would be Austin Carr, the wide receiver from Northwestern. He's one of those guys that just has that innate feel for the game of football. He knows where to be and when. He knows when his quarterback needs him to be. He's a sharp route runner. He's got fantastic hands. He's very rarely ever drops the pass. He just pops up and kind of takes advantage of soft areas of coverage all over the field. He's been, for me, the best receiver technically in the Big Ten this season. And I think he will still be around in rounds three and four.
Okay. And Rob?
The guy I have is Trevin Doral. I just want to see him play with some better quarterback play. I think that, you know, if he had, you know, better quarterback play at LSU, maybe he wouldn't be, you know, like a fourth round, you know, type guy. He didn't run as fast at the combine as people expected. But, you know, I think he's got a little bit of size to him. I think he would be, he's someone who I think could have more value than maybe he's currently weighted at, you know, and he'll be, I think, you know, a day three pick.
Can't you say wanted to see him with better quarterback play for every wide receiver that's ever come from LSU?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like a general consensus with those guys.
It's like a wide receiver graveyard. Isn't
it? Yes.
I always wonder those guys out of high school, how they convince them to join. You know, just think, what position do you play? Like wide receiver. You know, how do they get them to sign the dotted line? You know, it's like the worst place to go if you're in our receiver, isn't it?
There we go. Right, so let's let me just write this down here. So take weekly show to LSU, check. Right. next one, top can't miss player in this draft who's not named Myles Garrett. And that's Chris first.
You know, it kind of goes back to our, if anybody has a chance, at the Hall of Fame conversation we had a few weeks ago on this show. I'm going to go with O.J. Howard. I think he brings everything that you want to the table as a tight end, including character. I think he's going to work hard for your team, be able to block, be able to, you know, kid's a physical beast. So he's going to be fun to watch down the seam. I'm a big, big fan of O.J. Howard. I'm kind of surprised to see him slip as far as he is so far in these mock drafts.
Okay.
Yeah, and once again, because we've got such a deep cast, there's so many of these can't miss guys. The initial thoughts I had with Reuben Foster, again, you can't miss on him. Obviously, McCaffrey. But my favorite of all of these that you can't miss on is Jonathan Allen, the defensive end, Alabama. He's just the consummate professional. He's been playing at the college level in the same manner. He's not much he can't do. You can line him up either a defensive end or as a five technique or inside as a three technique on certain downs. You can just shift him all over the formation. He's a fantastic run defender. He's a good pass rusher, but he's just got the complete all-round game and the finest sort of technically finest player this year, I'd say. So you can't miss on him.
Does that but that's only if you agree to rub the deep heat into his shoulders after every game.
Well, of course. I mean, that goes with the territory when you play for Nick Saban. You know, he doesn't really have much respect for your body if it means that he wins today. So, if you get 5 years from Jonathan Allen, you know, before his shoulders pack up, then, you know, for the first round pick, I mean, that's the average is 3 years. Mm. So, you know, it's a low risk in my opinion.
Okay, so to make a note here, take short at Alabama, check, right? Good. Right, and finally, Rob, do you want to?
Yeah, Jamal Adams, the safety from LSU. I love him. Everything about his game, I'm just going to make this real quick. I mean, he's a leader in the locker room, according to everyone there as well, along with just being a top-notch player. I think he's going to be, you know, you look 2 years down the line, he's going to be one of those, you know, elite safeties in the NFL. I'm looking forward to see which team ends up with him. Hopefully he falls to 10.
Okay, right. Next one, in one word or one letter, or one number rather, which round does Tease Tabor and which round does Sidney Jones go in this draft? Chris?
Oh, wow, so in what round do they go? I would say third for Jones, Tabor. I still think Tabor can go towards the middle to end of the second round. His tape is really strong.
Yeah, I agree. Both were formerly round one picks for me, but I've got Jones will, unfortunately, I have to wait till round three now. He likely won't play at all next season. And Tabor would be round two.
Okay, and Rob?
I think there's an outside shot that someone could possibly take Sidney Jones towards the end of the second round. He's a really good talent. I mean, he's a first round guy. And if you, you know, check him out and, you know, check out the ankle, you know, I think if you like what you see, you know, coming along, maybe you take that shot. Tabor, I think second, late second as well. I mean, film don't lie.
Okay.
I think it's really important this year, you know, I just think that this year it's going to the second round is just going to be, yeah, it's so compelling when it comes to the number of first-round cornerback. I've got 10 first-round round one grades this year, the most I've ever had in one position group. You're going to have 5, 6, perhaps, round one corners still on the board in round two. And I think that's just, if you need a cornerback this year, you can really wait this year. It's going to be really interesting to see sort of which order. It's just a shame that Jones has got the injury, because I think he would have been in contention to be one of the first taken.
That's a beautiful segue, Matt. Thank you very much. Into our next quick hit, which is, how many first round grades do we have this year? I don't know, Chris, if you and Rob want to answer this, but Matt, you certainly can, I'm sure.
The last, if I remember rightly, and I apologise for my memory here, I've got I've got 22 altogether, which I don't usually. I usually have around about 15.
Mm-hmm. Chris, Rob, do you want to? I think
last count I had, I was at 18. Mm-hmm. So we're not too far off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a special Rob? Year. It really is.
Yeah. Absolutely, especially with the cornerback group. Rob, are you there, or have you fallen asleep again?
No, I have not fallen asleep. I mean, as far as the numbers, guys who are like, you know, top-level first-round guys, I think I don't have an exact number, like, specifically, but I think, you know, somewhere in that low 20s, you know, it's a really good year. You know, the top of the draft is just loaded, and, you know, the depth of it is really awesome as well. But I think, you know, somewhere in that low 20 area.
So would you, Matt, just quickly, would you say there's a lot of second round grades as well this year, more than usual?
Yeah, I think so. I just think that there's more of, it's kind of those first four rounds, especially the first three, there's more, obviously that's going to trickle down. So yeah, there's, it's just throughout the first sort of four, five, six rounds, really. It's just, it's very hard to kind of project anyone as a sixth or seventh round pick this year. You're sort of really scrambling around because there's so much depth in the middle of the draft.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait. Right, and the final quick hit, and this is Chris's favourite, and Chris, please don't start talking about top five pick again. Jibril Peppers, where does he go in this draft? Chris, you go first.
Well, what Neil's alluding to is I'm not a fan of Jabril Peppers. I think my original ranking I had him in the third round. I've given up on that a little bit, and I've put him into the second. He's going to get drafted. He's an impressive kid as far as being as a human being goes. But I don't think he has a spot in the NFL. He's very slow to read and react. He seems very confused all the time on the field. And I don't think that's going to change by moving him to safety. So I want to be wrong on him. You know, I've said it a million times. I bleed Michigan football, but I'm just not seeing it with Jabril Peppers.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great talking point. I have around one grade on him. I have done throughout his career, throughout this season, particularly looking where he's going to be playing at the next level. He is a guy that kind of suffers from his versatility, if you like. But I've got a first round grade on him. I would expect him to go in that top 32. I'm aware that that there are a handful of NFL teams who have him in the first round or their first safety, and there's other teams that have him right at the bottom of their board. So I think that you'll find that the disparity in opinion is translated in NFL draft rooms.
Mm. Okay, and Rob, settle the tie here, break it.
I don't think that he's necessarily a first-round guy. However, I think that he's going to go in the first round. All it takes is, one team to like you in the top 32 to get you into the first round. And, I mean, you know, if EJ Manuel can do it, so can he. I think he will end up in the first round.
Oh, I can hear the pain there in your voice, Rob. I'm really sorry. All right, and then quickly, Matt, just for Matt, where would you, I don't know if you've done a mock or not, but where would you mock, or who would you mock to the Bills at, what's that, number 10, Rob? Washington at number 17, and the Saints are, well, they've got, what, 11 and 32? Is that how it is at the moment?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay, so I start with Chris's Saints. I've got Marshall Lattimore with the 11th pick. Obviously, there's some kind of a little bit of a worry there with his hamstring issues, but he's just a superb football player. His speed to the ball, he can leave a big gap between him and his wide receiver and cover that distance in no time. And there's no one better, really, at sort of diagnosing the play and focus on the ball when it's in the air and be able to run and keep his head turned back at the same time. Being an ex-basketball player as well, his ball skills obviously are fantastic, and I think pretty much any team can do with a Marshall Lattimore. But I'm sure Chris would agree that the Saints could do with keep loading up with corners.
You know, one would be nice. I mean, if we had one NFL caliber corner last year, that would have been nice. So, yeah, no, I'd love Lattimore.
Okay, yeah, and okay. For Rob's Bills, I've gone, again, cornerback, I've gone for something slightly different for them. I've gone for like a bigger, more physical press guy in Tre'Davious White of LSU. I'm not sure if the Bills would even be interested in him, but I think they've got they've had a few issues. Obviously, Rob will be able to tell you more than me with corners in this off season. So they need cornerback help, and the next best guy on my board is White, and I've gone that way. I don't know what you think, Rob.
I think they obviously have a need at cornerback. I think with the switch to defense, you know, with Leslie Frazier being their defensive coordinator and Sean McDermott being the head coach, I think they're looking, you know, kind of like zone guys. So I don't think it's going to be a bigger priority, you know, as some may think. I would love to see them maybe in the second round, if like Tankersley from Clemson, someone like that available, I think would be a fun fit for what I perceive to be the defense that they're going to run. I would love to see them just get the, you know, just the best player available, because they have a lot of needs. I'd love to see O.J. Howard or Davis, the kid from Western Michigan, end up with them. I think it'd be kind of fun. Give him a little bit more weapons. See what Tyrod could do with some more weapons.
Okay.
And Washington, I went for Montrevious Adams, the defensive tackle. So many Redskins fans have said to me, "Oh, please, can you mock me defensive tackle?" So feeling the pressure. I think you, Neil, you might be one of those. I think you were, actually. Yeah, I think you were.
But, yes, I think I was.
Montrevious Adams, for me, is the best interior talent in this class. It gives a bit of everything. I mean, considering his size, you know, he really shouldn't move the way he does off the snap. And when he's in the mood, then he's unblockable, even with double teams. He routinely splits double teams with his first and second step. He's just so strong. He's like a bowling ball up the middle. So it gives you that kind of strength against defending the run that you'd expect inside, but also that sort of three technique pass rushing threat, which, you know, no quarterback in the league likes to have in their pockets. So he's a player I've loved for a couple of years now, and I'd love to see him. I think he'd be a great fit there.
Yep, I would be very disappointed if Washington doesn't take at least two defensive linemen in their top four picks in this draft. So yeah, that'll do me. Matt, it's been terrific. You've been very generous with your time tonight. Been a great sport with us, and I think I can speak for Chris and Rob and say thanks for coming on, and we look forward to absolutely tearing your draft guide apart following the draft, and we'll get you on to defend all your mistakes. How's that?
No, thanks for having me on. It's great to talk to you guys, and as I say, thank you for the support and the interest in the work we do and the guide, and anytime. Always happy okay. to talk about this, and please do critique anything you can. This it makes you a better scout if you miss on a few guys, or you know, difference of opinion. I think it just makes you a better scout, so I'm always open to that.
Absolutely. Just remind us again which charity the funds go this year.
All the proceeds of the books go to Muscular Dystrophy Campaign.
Okay, that's fantastic. Well done for that. And where can we find you on Twitter and also your website as well, please?
Sure, you can find me anytime at MattPhillips78, and the website is ukdraftguide.com.
Okay, Matt, thank you very much. And as it's 21 minutes past midnight here in the UK, have a great night.
You too. Thanks, guys. Cheers, Chris.
Thank you,
cheers,
Matt.
Bob. Thank you.
Okay, before we leave you, a couple of news items just to keep us up to date and just to demonstrate that we do actually follow the NFL. Chris, we had the fascinating story of actually we've probably got to Rob first, because he's probably experienced this on a number of occasions, of Deshaun Watson being chased out of an Alabama bar. Rob, how many bars have you been chased out of, and what's happening in this story?
I've been chased / kicked out of a bar once or twice in my life. Yes. I mean, it's just a kind of an unfortunate situation. From the looks of it, you know, Deshaun Watson was in a bar, and it's kind of one of those things where people were messing with him, but, you know, including, you know, I believe who was it? Chris Ryan, Ryan Anderson, from Alabama.
And yeah, a lot of reports I've read was Ryan Anderson and Wallace Gilberry, the DN from Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Bengals.
It's you know, kind of one of those things where we're kidding. Uh-oh, we did a few shots. We're not kidding anymore. So to Deshaun Watson's credit, you know, he kind of sensed that and, you know, kind of, you know, saw his way out of the bar. But really bad situation, especially for an NFL player to be doing something like that. That's Bush League silly stuff.
Will it have an effect on, Anderson's draft stock, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you have... I find it shows lack of character. You know, we're giving credit to Deshaun Watson for reading the room, but those are two very large men telling you to leave. That's just Deshaun Watson showing common sense at that point. But no, it's especially this time of year, even if you're joking, don't. I don't have a problem with Wallace Gilberry, because I've had people complaining that Gilberry is hanging out with Ryan Anderson. I don't have a problem with that. Gilberry's an Alabama guy. But, you know, Anderson, throughout this entire draft process, a lot of the positives you hear from him, because he's not an athletic guy, he's not a quick twitch guy, he always played second fiddle to Tim Williams, was his character. It was his leadership ability. It was his ability to show up in big games. These are the things that we've applauded him for. So if he's becoming belligerent in restaurants and bars during the draft process, that's a big red flag for me. But, I mean, Joe Mixon's going to be a late first, second, or early second round pick this year. So if that can happen, Ryan Anderson should be fine.
I guess I would look at it as, hey, in a few weeks' time, I'm going to be a millionaire. So what am I going to do between now and that date when I become a millionaire? I'm not going to go into any bars anywhere. I'm going to stay home. I'm going to sit at home and do nothing for these next few weeks other than train and, you know, et cetera. Just stay out of any situation that could possibly lead to trouble. And that goes for Watson, too. What's he doing in a bar in Alabama, what, 2 months, 3 months after, or 4 months after beating Alabama in the championship game? That's just asking for trouble, and yeah, I don't like it. Stay home.
Yeah, somebody spit in his food. I mean, that's safe to say, right? Like, we can just kind of assume that's... No, it's as a minimum. Unfortunate. As a minimum.
Yeah, I don't know. I just... What do you think, Rob? Should Deshaun Watson and Ryan Anderson, should they be staying out of bars this time of year?
Nothing good happens at 2 a.m. in the morning. Yeah, they should definitely be should be staying at home. Although I'm sure that their new agents have given them... you know, interest-free loans. So, you know, everyone's got at least a little bit of money in their pocket. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, first off, Rob, no good story starts before 2 o'clock in the morning. And to go along with you, Neil, you're absolutely right. You have months, and it's funny that we have to say this, or it's quite sad actually, but we're weeks away and we're still saying, don't get into a fight. Don't get arrested. Don't smoke weed. Mm-hmm. Don't get drunk at a bar. These are very simple requests. Some should say that they go without saying, but just stop. Be good. Millions of dollars are at stake. You would not believe the things I would do for millions of dollars, let alone things I wouldn't do. So it's insane.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It also speaks a little bit about privileged athletes, doesn't it? Who have got to do probably whatever they've wanted to do in their last few years, and I think they can just continue doing that throughout life. It says a lot about the character of all three guys, certainly, and certainly the quarterback. I don't like that at all. Anyway, moving on to a more positive news story for you, Rob. You may be having a Hall of Fame running back in your division.
Yay! Every year the Patriots go out, they sign a player to that maybe past their prime, but may end up being really good. You know, sometimes it doesn't work. Albert Haynesworth and Chad Ochocinco, you know, but, you know, sometimes the flyer that they take does. Obviously, it worked with Randy Moss. I'm more bullish, I think, than... Sorry, what were you going to say, Chris?
Sometimes the Garrett Blount scores 18 touchdowns in a season.
Yeah, like that one as well. obviously, Blount isn't on the team. So what the Patriots are doing now is they're, you know, they got Adrian Peterson in town for a visit. And if he's willing to, you know, probably take a, you know, quite a substantial pay cut from what he was making, he's going to be playing in Foxborough next year, which I think that the offense, I think that he was maybe a little better. I mean, he was injured last year, so you have that as well. But man, I just feel like if he ends up on New England, he's going to return to his 2015 form, because that's just kind of the way it works. Maybe I'm a jilted Bills fan, so that's how I'm perceiving it. But it just feels like if he goes there, he's gonna get a you know, he's gonna finish strong with them.
Okay, two other quick pieces of news. Oh dear, what was that? Two other quick pieces of news. Maybe that's the Dolphins coming out to attack us. The Dolphins cut former number 3 overall pick Deion Jordan, one of the great stars of the 2013 draft. Are we ever going to see the end of this 2013 draft? I don't know. What are your thoughts there, Chris? Deion Jordan, is he somebody the Saints will be trying to pick up?
No, God, no. You know what's funny is Jeff Ireland was the one who traded up to draft Deion Jordan, and he is now the one that's been running the Saints war room the past few drafts. Deion Jordan comes up in any Twitter conversation that I have regarding somebody who's skeptical of the Saints draft picks. He is the biggest skid mark on Jeff Ireland's career. So I think he will continue to keep his distance. And I mean, come on, the kid has what, 3 sacks in 4 years? It's done.
They were really
good sacks. They were really, really impressive. And he spread them out, which was nice. I mean, you know, his career was unfortunate. He seems to carry a lot of demons with him. So hopefully, you know, he's able to get that in wraps. And I'm not going to feel too bad for the kid. He's, what, 26, 27? Has millions of dollars in the bank. Lives in Miami. He'll be okay.
And the other player that the Dolphins signed was TJ McDonald. Now, isn't this the same TJ McDonald who is going to miss half the season?
He is. He got suspended. He's going to miss the first half of the year. Signed right after that was announced, which I thought was kind of funny. He's probably one of the best players that was still available, I thought. But, you know, he's a big hitter. Coach's son, his father, like last year, I'm not sure where he's coaching now, was the defensive backs coach for the Buffalo Bills. You know, so he's got, you know, some definite, you know, natural NFL acuity to him. But he would get beaten deep in L.A. Last year. So. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens with it, but he's not going to play for the first half of the year, so.
Mm. Okay, Chris, any thoughts on that move?
It's an odd pairing. He seems to, you know, he's an in-the-box safety. He's a big hitter. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays out, because they tend to prefer rangier safeties. But on a one-year deal, you're seeing that a lot this time. We're in phase 2 of free agency. It's kind of a can't-miss with him. You know, he's depth to Rashad Jones. He's one of the best strong safeties in football, and no, I think it's a solid pickup for him.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's all the news, guys. Unless you have any other breaking news, or so. If not, then we'll leave it there. And just remind you that you can order Matt Phillips from 40 Yard Scouting. You can order his draft guide by going to his Twitter account that you mentioned earlier, or his email, or his website. And yeah, I guess are we still hiring Jeff Fisher for the end? If so, you're going about to hear Jeff Fisher. If not, you might hear Justin impersonating somebody else. Who knows? Thank you, and good night.
If you listen very closely, every time Adrian Peterson scores a touchdown for the New England Patriots, you can hear the Ryan brothers buy a round of beers at the closest Buffalo Wild Wings.
All right, everybody, that'll do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Huge thank you to our guest, Matt Phillips. You can follow him at MattPhillips78. Take advantage of his scouting expertise, please, please. He has written 270 pages for a reason, and it's all good stuff. I want to thank the guys, Neil, Chris, and, of course, Rob. You can follow us at Interview Podcast. Email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. Check out our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. Email us, text us, carrier pigeon us, whatever you want to do. We want to be in contact with you, so please leave us a review. Check us out on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are sold. And with that, I'm going to turn you over to Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.